is an extract from the Nature podcast. For the full show, go to nature.com/nature/podcast.
This week, Nature is taking part in Covering Climate Now, a project featuring over 250 media outlets around the world. We're all publishing content about climate change in the lead up to the UN Climate Summit in New York. One of Nature's pieces is a commentary from environmental lawyer Farhana Yameen. Farhana has a long pedigree on the United Nations circuit, attending almost every conference of the parties, or COP, and she was a lead author on 3 of the 5 IPCC reports. But after decades spent in negotiating rooms, writing legal advice, and constructing treaties, something changed in Farhana. In April this year, she swapped her UN resolutions for a backpack and a fair amount of nerve, and glued herself to the London offices of the petrochemical company Shell. She joined an activist group called Extinction Rebellion. Now, 6 months on, Nature's chief opinion editor, Sara Abdullah, went and met Farhana at her home in London for a coffee.
Many people in the UK will actually remember seeing you on the front of newspapers as the woman who glued herself to the steps of Shell. Take me back to that day in April where you found yourselves on the steps of one of the world's largest oil companies.
So on the day itself, all 5 digits of both hands stuck completely down on this pool of superglue. And then it took the police officers about 20, 30 minutes to prise each finger off. And then I was taken to a police station, Lewisham, where there were many, many other activists. I stayed in the police cell for much of the night and then was released.
So we'll come back to the impacts of your night in a cell in Lewisham. It's not often spending a night in a cell in Lewisham can really change the world. But just the road that led you to those steps, you're not the sort of person that would usually be gluing themselves to the steps of an international oil company. If we go back 10 years, 20 years, there's words like Kyoto and Paris on your CV. What does being an international environmental lawyer at the highest levels involve?
My work at these negotiations is to support the legal, procedural and strategic interventions by small island states. I often work for the Alliance of Small Island States or a combination of those and the least developed countries. And I give them advice on, you know, when interventions are needed, what the contents of those should be. I usually work in close association with the scientists that are also advising all of these.
So the Volta Fas that you've been through this year is kind of wholesale. You've gone from crafting carbon taxes and carbon markets and levers inside of international governance to writing in the pages of Nature, these things allow the incumbents to just continue to pay to play the same old games. So what galvanised you? What was the moment when you thought, stuff this, I've tried to be a good girl, good woman, for 3 decades, I've really tried, but I've reached the end of that particular road for now.
I think the IPCC report, the 1.5 degree report that came out in October, when it did finally come out, something snapped in me about why we've got this report, but you know, it's not going to get listened to or get ignored again. And it was too much. I felt like I had to do something different.
So you joined Extinction Rebellion, you lent them your skills, honed at all-nighters at 22 COPs or however many, most of the COPs, and you moved the needle. Extinction Rebellion and the school strikes utterly changed the public discourse on the need for action. So you've talked about April. What happened next?
Greta came to the UK and met with all of the political leaders from every single party, asked those political leaders to do something and also to talk to Extinction Rebellion. Extinction Rebellion had meetings then with the government, and I coordinated a team of Extinction Rebellion rebels to be present at that meeting. And then a motion was passed which recognises that we are in a climate and environmental crisis and which calls on the government to take urgent action. So it was the first time that a motion of this kind had been passed by a national government. And now more than half the councils in the UK have declared a climate and ecological emergency or a climate emergency.
So that's the kind of professional success. But on a personal level, one of the working titles for the piece that you've written for Nature was No Going Back. So you've stepped away from XR now, Extinction Rebellion. Can you just go back to being a lawyer at the highest levels?
I hope so. I think so. I feel that most of the climate environment community that I was part of, the policy community and some of the green environmental NGOs that I worked very closely with, were in fact very proud, and I think Extinction Rebellion built on all of their work, actually. So one of the most concrete things that happened is that Theresa May's government then passed legislation making the UK one of the first countries to have a legally binding net zero by 2050 target, which had been worked on for decades, including by me, including by all of the environmental NGOs in this country. So it was a collective win for everyone.
Having had a taster of overnight, more or less, change, does part of you worry that you could be back inside another airless committee room getting really cross with everybody?
Oh, yes, I do, a lot. So a little bit, I'm sort of training myself up to be more patient again and remember that I can't just be a rebel inside the UN in that way. I'll have to make sure that the countries whose future is at stake become more rebellious. Actually, that's my role, is to make them shout and scream and not accept a less ambitious outcome. So I feel I understand what my role as a rebel inside will be, and I hope that, you know, members of the public, other professionals, will keep on rebelling in their roles wherever they find themselves.